Welcome to Arbor Bridge Church's weekly podcast with your teacher, Daryl Canty. Arbor Bridge Church exists to bridge the gospel and our community by connecting people to Jesus and each other. Visit us online at arborbridgechurch.com.
Have you ever had to forgive God? I've shared with some of you guys before that before I worked at this church, I was attending a church, attending a different church, where while I was at that church, I believed that God, you know, was leading me to work with students. So I worked with the youth ministry there. I volunteered at the church, and when the youth minister job came open, I felt as though God wanted me to work there as a youth minister. So at that time, the job that I had was ending, so it seemed like a perfect time, for a perfect opportunity for everyone. And not everyone agreed, though. So even though the current job that I had was ending, I thought it was appropriate for me to not apply for any other jobs because, you know, this is what God wanted me to do. So I only applied for that specific job, and I waited for God to kind of do his thing and, get it for me. So several candidates, it got down to me and one other guy, and the church picked the other guy. And I didn't get the job. So now, here I am, my job's ending. I didn't get the job that God wanted me to apply for. And so now I'm thinking, God, where are you? And if you guys know anything about getting like church jobs or pastor jobs, it is an excruciatingly slow process. So there's no like going out the next day and just getting another one. I was just stuck. I felt like, you know, I did everything I was supposed to do, but God didn't seem like he was doing what he was supposed to do. And I got angry. And so in all my anger, you know, all my anger towards God came together during this one moment. It was during the holiday season. This was going down. So we were struggling. I had two kids. It was Christmas. And the leaders of the church that didn't hire me, these guys show up on my front porch with groceries and toys for my kids, all smiling. And I'm like, you know, I'm standing there like, God, where are you? Please strike these guys dead. I don't want to see them. Just, it was awful, 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 awful. And God didn't do that. Let me ask you this. Have you ever had to forgive God? Like, have you ever had God do something that disappointed you? Have you ever had an expectation of what God was supposed to do or how he was supposed to act in a certain situation, and then when that situation arose, he didn't do what you expected him to do? Have you ever had to forgive God? I have. I'm not the only one either. So God's been disappointing people for centuries. About 2,000 years before Jesus shows up on earth, God makes a promise to a man named Abraham to make him into a nation and to give him a land for his nation. And that might not sound like a big deal to you or to me, but at that time, that was gigantic. I mean, this is a way for them to create a legacy that wouldn't go away. So Abraham's descendants would talk about this all the time. They say, you guys, remember the promise. God's promised us. And they would tell this story amongst themselves all the time, and they would get excited about it. So eventually, Abraham's grandson, a man named Joseph, becomes second in command in Egypt. And Joseph is really good friends with the king of Egypt. And the king of Egypt says, hey, invite all of your family to come here to live in Egypt. And so that's what Joseph does. He invites his brothers and his dad and his nieces and his nephews, and now they're all living in Egypt. So now this section of Abraham's family are living really well in what's arguably the most powerful country in the whole world at that time. And if you're a Jewish person, you would have to think, this is it. This is the promised land. This is what God was talking about. God promised us that one day we would have a family and we would live in the promised land. And this has to be it, right? It's amazing. How could it be better than this? After decades of waiting for God to finally come through on his promise, this looks like it's it. And then this happened. Now, Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly and increased in numbers and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king to whom Joseph meant nothing came to power in Egypt. Look, he said to his people, the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor, and they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites, and they worked them ruthlessly. One verse, they worked them ruthlessly, remember that. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor, in brick and mortar, and with all kinds of work in the fields, in all their harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. Didn't we just hear that? Often when the Bible says something very close together, two times it's meant to say it. It's like this. Those people were ruthless to us. Those people were ruthless to us. That this is what the author wants you to know. It's to say it's awful is an understatement. Verse 22, then it gets worse. Then Pharaoh gave this order to his people. Every Hebrew boy that's born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. So Jewish people are living in a wealthy country, and their families are growing. They're having a good old time, and it seems like God is blessing them, and everything's super wonderful. And then a king comes along and makes them slaves. Like, imagine what that day was like, right? You're living like we live now. We're living happy, and then a king comes along and says, "Hey, guess what? Everybody, all you guys who are living fat and happy, you're a slave now." That day had to be crazy. This is what's happening to them. And not only does he make them slaves, he works them ruthlessly, and their lives are so bitter. So, and here's what we would ask, right? If this all that was going down, if we were living like, you know, we live now, and then somebody came and made us slaves in one day, what we'd be saying is, God, where are you? What's going on? We'd be praying. We'd be saying, God, please stop this. God, please, you know, please intervene. Please do something about it. We thought, you know, the Jewish people, they were like, we thought this was the promised land. I mean, you promised us. I mean, what are you doing? Why aren't you doing something about this? I had a Jewish friend who used to talk to me about how she felt like the slavery that the Jewish people experienced in Egypt is comparable to the slavery that black people experienced in America, which, and I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it's helpful to give us a picture of what we're talking about here. So take all the pictures and all the imagery and all the videos and all the movies you've seen that contain stuff about black slavery here and apply that to what they're going through. And I think that helps us have an appreciation of just how ruthless this time is. And you can imagine, it's not very hard for you to think about how a Jewish person living at that time would be angry with God. God, we waited for you to give us your promise. Looks like you'd given it to us. And now we are slaves. Where are you at? Where are you at? And they would be praying and begging God to show up. And it would look like he's not doing anything. In another place in the Bible, a different author experiencing a different suffering writes some words to God that I think would apply to this situation. And even though it's from a different time period, I think it'll be helpful for us to think about these. So see if you can imagine these enslaved Jewish people saying this. It says this, "How long, O Lord, must we call for help, but you don't listen? Like we or cry out to you violence, but you don't save. And why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There's strife and conflict abounds." I feel like this is a good summary of what they might have been feeling in Egypt. God, where are you? We've been turned into slaves. But to top things off, to top all the slavery off and all the awful things off that they're going through, they're being forced to throw their sons into the river. So, if there's a time for God to show up, wouldn't it be that? I mean, if there's a time for God to say, okay, enough's enough. Like, I mean, you could tolerate, there's lots of things in life you could tolerate, but it would seem like God would say, okay, whoa. No throwing sons into the river, right? That's what he would say something. Just when it looks like there's no hope, God shows up. Check this out. "Now, a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months because the Pharaoh, the king, is saying, throw your babies into the river. So she's hiding her son. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. And then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. And his sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. And she saw the basket among the reeds, and she sent her female slave to get it. And she opened it and saw the baby, and he was crying, and she felt sorry for him. 'This is one of the Hebrew babies,' she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, 'Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?' 'Yes, go,' she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you.' So the woman took the baby and nursed him." Woo! So, some of you know this story is about a man named Moses, and Moses is a well-known character in the Bible that ends up leading the Jewish people out of Egypt, out of slavery. So this is a really, really, really great story. And Moses' mom does something really heartbreaking. She follows the king's command to put her baby into the river. And you need to pause and think about that for a second. I was with some friends earlier and we were talking about this. You know, pause and think about that. Think about what would have to happen in order for you to do something like that. Like, I was saying to my friends, like, if they said, if our government said to us, hey, listen, you got to put your son in the river, I'm like, come make me. You're going to have to make me. You are going to have to kill me to get me to do that. So think about what would have to be happening to make her do that. Like, why wouldn't, and then she does it, and she doesn't even wait till she's discovered. Like, she does it without them actually physically forcing her to do it. So she has to be so afraid that something would happen to her or the rest of her family to do something like this. So she puts her son in the river and can't bear to stay, can't watch what's going to happen. And you can probably relate to that. You're like, I just don't want to see this. Moses' sister stays and watches what happens, and the king's daughter finds the baby and she wants to keep him. Moses' sister goes and gets Moses' mom, and now she gets to nurse her son and get paid for it. God's good, right? God is good. That day, God's really good. Unless you're somebody else's mother that day, right? Imagine this. Let's pretend. So imagine you're a Jewish woman who has twins. One boy, one girl, and she has them the day before Moses' mom puts Moses in the river. She names the girl Susan, she names the boy William, and then, as heart-wrenching as it is, because she's so afraid of the king, she puts William into the river like she's been told. But this time, there's no basket. This time, there's no king's daughter. This time, there's no happy ending to the story. And then the next day, she gets to hear this super cool story about Moses' mom putting him in the river. Now, let me ask you again. Have you ever had to forgive God? And the immediate pushback, right, is God doesn't do anything wrong, right? But that's not what I asked you. I didn't ask you if God does things wrong. I asked you, have you ever had to forgive God? That's the question. That's the question. Because if you're the mother of Susan and William, you are going to be mad. And mad is an understatement, right? You're going to be like, irate, furious, bitter. And here's your problems with God. Here's your problems with what God let allowed to happen in that situation. God doesn't really care about me. Obviously, he cares about somebody else's baby, but he doesn't care about mine. And when he could do something, he didn't. Because he obviously did something in this situation. Those would be your problems with God. And that's just to start the conversation. That's just the beginning. God, don't you really care about me? And if you do, why didn't you do anything? Those of you guys who know this story, you know God shows up, and not just for Moses, for the whole nation. Listen to this. It says, the Lord said, I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt, and I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land into the good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. Yes, that sounds really, really great. That sounds really, really great. God's going to come down and rescue them. But here's the problem. Those words are 80 years after Moses is born. So, if I'm the fictional character I created for this sermon called Susan, I've watched my mom be tortured by the decision to put her kid into the river. I've listened to this super cool story about Moses, and then I've watched person after person, family after family, put their sons into the river for 80 more years. And so when Susan hears this story about God coming and saying, hey, everybody, I'm ready to take you to the promised land. He's like, yeah, thanks. You're about 80 years too late. You can imagine that Susan and God have some wrestling to do before she's like, okay, I'm ready to go to the promised land. Super excited for that. You can imagine something's got to go down first. So, what do we do? What do we do when this isn't a story I made up or a story that we're reading in the Bible? When God's disappointed you in some way, when you feel hurt by what he's failed to do or didn't show up to do, what do you do then? What do you do then? So, often people do two things, one of two things. First, they pretend everything's okay. And you know this story, right? They pretend like, whoop, not a big deal. Yeah, God didn't show up like I wanted him to, but it's okay. It didn't bother me. They pretend they go to church services and they sing the songs and they talk the talk and they do all the things that other Christians expect them to do, and they pretend, they pretend. And then the other one is that people walk away, right? They say, that's enough. I can't take it. They have questions like, you know, I can't worship a God who acts like this. Or they say things like, you know, I can never forgive a God for not showing up for me when I needed him most. And so between those two things, you got most people. That's how most people approach this. And then there's this third group of people. This third group of people who wrestle with God. They go into a room and they fight it out. They say, okay, God, let's do this. The same way Susan would have had to. Listen to this. Listen to this. Lord, I continue to ask you for help. And when will you listen to me? I cried out. I cried to you about the violence, but you did nothing. People are stealing things and hurting others. They're arguing and fighting. Why do you make me look at these terrible things? And you might ask them questions like this. You might need to wrestle with God. And is it okay to ask God questions? Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Is it okay to wrestle with God? God prefers that you wrestle with him than you pretend, or you fight it out with him than you walk away. He prefers, and again, it's not even close. He prefers those two things way less than he prefers than you wrestle it out with him. And may there be a point in your relationship with God where you might have to forgive him? Yes. 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 Not because he's done something wrong, but because he did not do what you wanted him to do, or you expected him to do, or you thought he should do. Because maybe you feel hurt by something he's allowed to happen, or because you expected him to show up in a way that he didn't show up. So you stay in it and you ask your questions and you wrestle with God and you fight it out. A committed Jesus follower can both wrestle with God and have honest questions and still have genuine faith in God. So pastor and author Craig Rochelle says it like this: what if honestly acknowledging your doubts is a first step towards building a deeper faith? What if embracing your secret questions opens the door for a maturing knowledge of God's character? What if becoming closer to God, developing genuine intimacy with him, requires you to bear that which feels unbearable, to hear him through an ominous utterance, to trust him in the moment of doom, to embrace his strength when you're weak with a burden? What if it takes real pain to experience deep and abiding hope? What if it takes real pain to experience deep and abiding hope? One of the benefits that we have when we're getting to read these stories in the Old Testament or the New Testament, we're reading stories in the Bible, we're reading history, is that we get to see the end. We get to see how the story ends. So it's easier for us to make sense of what God does or what God might have been doing when we see how the story ends. And that's why often in our lives, it's hard to tell. So when God rescues the people from slavery he's trying to take them to the promised land, it's not long after they leave Egypt before they're complaining. So when God rescues the people from Egypt, he's not just rescuing them. He's renewing like a covenant or a promise with them. He's saying, I'm going to rescue you from slavery, but let's talk about this promise between us. He's saying, I love you. I'm going to be your God. You're going to be my people. We're going to love each other. And God says, you're going to follow my commands, and I'm going to bring you to this place of wonder. It's going to be super amazing. So very shortly after they leave slavery, they're complaining, and they're saying, you know, this is awful. You know, we should have just stayed in Egypt. We had it good back there. Good old Egypt. That was so nice. We should have stayed there. And this is like being on a honeymoon. You're on your honeymoon with the person you just promised your life to, and your car breaks down, and the person you married turns to you and says, "I should have never married you." You would say, why would you say something like that to me? Right? This is what they're saying to God. We should have never agreed to this thing. It was better for us in slavery. I wish we had never promised to each other to be together. That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. Listen to this. This is important. They're saying this even after they left a land where they were slaves. So think about this. What if they weren't enslaved? What if they were living in a place that they loved? Like what if it was just like when Joseph was alive and they all came down and Joseph was second in command and everyone's having a big party and everyone's loving it and Egypt's the best place to live. When Moses shows up and says, okay, I'm taking you guys to the promised land, what would happen? They were like, what? You see you later. I don't know. We're not going anywhere. We are not going anywhere. We are in a wonderful place. Why would we go anywhere? They never left. They would have never left. So, and again, this is tough. So get ready. God uses, not causes, God uses their discomfort in Egypt to create a desire in them to go where they need to go. To go somewhere better. That's my thought for at least part of the reason why God shows up later than we would like him to in this story. Why we're watching babies being thrown into the river and saying, what the heck? Where are you at, God? I can't answer why God didn't do that in your life, in your story, why God's not showing up when you want him to. But here's what I would say. Because this is what God says to me. This is what God says to me all the time. He says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, and neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. God's often doing things I can't see. He's doing things I don't get. He's doing things I don't like. He doesn't see things the way I see him. He doesn't see death the way I see it. He doesn't see life the way I see it. He doesn't see sin the way I see it. He doesn't see holiness the way I see it. He doesn't see life the way I see it. I mean, we could talk all day long. We could every word. He doesn't see this chair the way I see it. He is higher than my ways. So let me ask you this. Has God not performed in the way that you thought he should have? And do you need to fight with him, to wrestle with him? Maybe do you need to forgive him? Maybe there's something you feel like he should have prevented, or he should have stopped, or she should have made happen, or he's somebody he should have healed, or something he should have done, or something he should have intervened in. Do you need to forgive him for not meeting your expectations? He loves you desperately, and he wants you to come to know him in a way that allows you to trust him despite what he's doing or not doing. He wants you to be able to trust him in every circumstance. So to get to that place, to get to there, you're going to probably have to fight with him first, wrestle with him first. And if that's something you need to do, something you need to forgive God today, today is the day to start that process. So we're going to take communion together. I'd love for you to determine if you have unresolved junk between you and him as you take communion together today, and that you would face those things. You would face them down. You wouldn't pretend and you wouldn't walk away, but you would face it. We're going to talk more about what God's going for next week, what he's going for when he allows this stuff to go down, what he wants from you. But today, I just want you to decide, are you willing to face it? To face whatever it is that needs to be resolved between you and him. As we take communion together today, lay those burdens at the cross and begin your journey to the promised land. Let's pray together.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on our church, visit us online at arborbridgechurch.com.